I'm in Inniskillen and I'm talking to Rosemary Barton. Rosemary, where did you come from originally?
I grew up on the Fermanagh, Monaghan border at a place called Clontivern, about 5 miles outside Newton Butler and about a mile from Clonus, which was in County Monaghan.
And so growing up there in the 1950s and 60s...
1960s.
What was it like then?
Well, I had quite an idyllic childhood. I was brought up on a farm with my brother and sister, and we had a very, very pleasant, very, very happy childhood. However, during the late 60s, early 70s, it was marred, obviously, by the troubles that started within our county. I lived near just within 50, 60 yards of customs post, which I frequently seen go up in smoke, or heard it been blown up in the middle of the night, or seen it been burned in the middle of the day. So that left a bit of a tinge on the happy childhood I had.
Was there a certain amount of suspicion, looking over your shoulder wondering... Are they involved or are they part of the...
Not really. I think we took our neighbours. I lived, obviously, in the area I lived in was a mainly Roman Catholic area. We still worked together. We still helped each other, especially in farming life. We still communicated, visited each other. There may have been maybe a little suspicion, but... As a child, I was not aware of it. Perhaps it was the way I was brought up. My father got on with his life and continued in his work, and it may have been the way I was brought up.
But then when it came to the height of the troubles in the 1970s, late 70s, 80s, I mean, there was so much... destruction.
Oh, there was so much destruction, and... It actually became quite, if one could describe it, as quite a nuisance, because unfortunately I lived in what I would classify as no man's land, especially when the army set up permanent road checks. They set them up closer to Newton Butler. I lived nearer Clonus, and really to get home from a day's work or get home from school, I had to go through these checkpoints. We did not know how long we would be kept at these checkpoints, especially if there was someone that perhaps was proving a little bit awkward with identification to the army. The checkpoints were just closed.
And so when you left school, did you work somewhere, or did you stay at home?
No, well, I left school obviously at 18. No, I went on to university. I went to Wales to university, but obviously was home every during summer, Easter, Christmas, holidays. And it was then particularly that I became much more aware of the troubles, simply because I was out of the country, living in a particularly peaceful setting in North Wales, coming back to travelling at night. Obviously, where I live, country area, I had to travel by car, had to go through checkpoints, back and forth through checkpoints. While the soldiers, police were always courteous, they, at the same time, if there was someone in front of you that perhaps... was not so courteous, the checkpoint very often was closed down, and you could have been sitting at a checkpoint an hour before you could go to your home, which was a few hundred yards the other side of the checkpoint in no man's land.
I see. And did you, I suppose when you were visiting your parents at home again, there must have been a constant worry about them, you know, because as you say, they were in no man's land, and were they ever threatened? Were there ever shots fired at the house?
No, we never had shots fired at the house. Yes, the army were shot at when they stopped on the roadway below our house. We lived on a hill. But no, the family, I must say, were never, ever threatened. at that time, my father actually took sick in the middle of the Troubles and passed away in 1977. And our neighbours were very kind, understanding. My mother lived as a widow then with a young family throughout the remainder of the Troubles. We grew up, went to university. She was frequently on her own at night, and never once would she have felt under any sort of fear.
Yeah, because I think your neighbour down the road, Eric Nicol, was he living very far away from you?
Oh, about 2 miles or so. Yes, yeah. And he had a different story.
He did?
Yes.
So why were you not threatened and targeted, and he was, in a sense? That
in a sense.
There were shots fired.
Yeah, it's... I don't know. I can't answer that. Maybe I...
Had it something to do with your siblings, you know, that had you...
I had two sisters. I had a brother and sister, both of them younger than me. We mixed with our local neighbours. We went to school. We travelled on the bus together. We sat beside. We didn't necessarily sit beside Protestant. We sat beside whoever we had. Where the seats were in the bus, and B, very often, if I had something in common with maybe the same age group as a girl going to another school, I sat beside them. We discussed our homeworks, etc.
But when it came to Sunday and church time, there was a kind of a detour to get to the church. In your case,
in my case, there was no detour. Mm-hmm. I had no detour to make. The road was, as I said, it was open.
Yeah.
The road was not closed. It wasn't blown up. It was open. So I had no detour to make.
Okay.
At all, I went straight into church. While I lived in Northern Ireland, I went to church in the Republic of Ireland.
Yeah.
And indeed, my parents are both buried in the Republic of Ireland, because that was my local church. After all, don't forget, I was 1 mile from Clonus,
okay.
4 miles from Newton Butler. So Clonus was the natural. I was within the Clonus parish church.
You didn't see a border then, is that?
I didn't see a border. Yes, I didn't. No, I didn't see a border. But yes, the money was different. I was always brought up to using, if I can go back to your punts and your pounds before your euros.
Yeah.
So I knew about punts. I knew about the pound, the different monies. I then, of course, that came became euros and pounds. Knew about all of that. But don't forget, I also, along with living beside a customs post, I lived beside a border post where animals were brought through every day in life, or most days in life. And I would have witnessed cattle waiting on lorries to be punched to be imported into Northern Ireland. So that was just part of my life and something that I accepted.
Yeah, because I suppose everything, you could have a field divided in two, and one side it's in Southern Ireland and the other,
yes, of course, and that was
and
normal.
Even the colour of the cows.
it was very normal for farmers along the border to have land both in Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland. That was not thought of. They farmed them separately, and there didn't appear to be any issue. Of course, there was obviously less red tape then in relation to farming, and farmers didn't seem to find it much of a problem.
And of course, it's Church of Ireland.
It's Church of Ireland. I was Church of Ireland. Yes, I went to Church of Ireland. And we had a member of the congregation, former member of the congregation, murdered. He was a Ulster Defence Regiment chap. His funeral was not south of the border. He was buried in a church that was in Northern Ireland. For reasons, obviously security reasons, etc.
Was he shot in?
He was shot south? About a mile from where I live.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. What was his name?
Harry Crichton.
Imagine, and I mean, that was close to home, wasn't
it? Oh, yes, that was close to home. He was somebody I knew, somebody I'd grown up with, and a very, very sad, sad day for the community. Yeah. He died in his parents' arms, and he was in the verge, I understand, of getting married.
Yeah.
And so, sad day for the community. It was something that shocked the community, something that shocked my parents, and something my parents often talked about during their lifetime.
Yeah, because he was a part-time UDR.
He
was farming during the day.
He was a librarian.
Oh, was he a librarian?
Librarian, yeah. During the day, working in Enniskillen.
Yeah. So those years, I mean, did they, when you look at them and see what was going on, did it almost become the norm? And I asked a lot of people about this.
Yes, it did become the norm. It was something that you had to accept and make the best of what life you had and get on with it. Mm. And did indeed become the norm. And as I said, it became the norm so much that really I didn't realise the effect the Troubles had on one and how much it curtailed their movements until basically I went away, left the country, left Northern Ireland to go to university in Wales. It was then that I realised, oh, I have much more freedom over here, coming and going. For example, when I was being brought up, don't forget when I went into shops, you had your handbag. Towns were had barriers across them, and cars were searched going into towns and all of that. Here in Enniskillen that happened, and often in shops you had your handbags searched going into them. So it was very strange.
Yeah.
Very strange. Shopkeepers obviously at the end of the day would often have took a quick recce around the shop, but to search it to see that no incendiary devices had been left, so that they would have exploded 2 or 3 hours later and set fire to the business.
Yeah. And, kind of, it's the, to try and imagine this, because for me it's very difficult to imagine, that way of life. And it's only up the road.
Yeah, I can understand that, because 3 or 4 years ago, my daughter now, she actually was looking up something on the internet, and she came across pictures of the customs hut and the cattle pens beside where I lived were blown up, and a couple of the neighbouring roads that had been cratered by the army. And it was with disbelief that she looked. She said, "Really, Mama? Did that really happen when you were growing up?" I said, "Yes." She said, "But how did you cope?" I said, "Well, it became part of our life, and we had to learn to live with it and make the best we had and get on with it."
I know. And so, especially having a farm right on the border and being Protestant and having just one brother to take over the farm, there was a tendency to try and move that family on.
Yes, there was that tendency, and indeed, no, it did not happen to us. And to be honest, it is not something either my father spoke about or my mother spoke about. As I said, my father died late 70s. My mother died 10 years ago now. But it was something that...
Why do you think they didn't speak about it?
They didn't want to think about it, or maybe there was a tendency, again, this tendency, it'll never happen to us, or it won't happen to us. The same as many people take risks and say, "Oh, it'll never happen to me." I think there was that tendency. Put it to the back of your mind, get on with life. Try and work and live with people so that everybody can have an acceptable way of life and reason the best of what they've got.
People say that they went around with their heads down because they didn't want to to say something wrong or say something out of line, or, you know, was there that kind of...
There may have been that. I mean, people were very conscious not to say something to offend maybe a Roman Catholic neighbour, or maybe vice versa. But it was something I was taught from the start of life. You respect what people are, how they react to things, and you get on with your own business respectfully.
Mm-hmm. So when you finished your studies in Wales, did you come back to Ireland?
Yes, I did. Yeah, no, I came back to County Fermanagh, 1979. Mm-hmm. I came back to County Fermanagh, and I started teaching in Keshe.
Oh, yes.
In Keshe, which is north Fermanagh,
yeah.
Slightly further from the border. But again, it was...
Was it a comprehensive school? Or
It was a post-primary, non-grammar school, yes. Yeah. And that was where I now live, and yeah. It's something I now enjoy. I started teaching there and have lived there ever since. In relation to Keshe itself, it was an area, again, a border area. I didn't live quite as close to the border. It was 8 or 10 miles from the border there, but it was an area that had its troubles too.
And your work teaching in the school there, mm-hmm. So was that, you know, I did talk to some school teachers in different mm-hmm. schools, and they had their problems as well.
Of course we had our problems in school. We had our problems in school again. We had many children whose parents were on the security forces. Those parents, I do know the wives of those gentlemen on the security forces, they very often lived in fear of wondering would their husbands come home at night time. At that stage there had been several school bus drivers murdered, even some of them with children on the buses. And where I lived, indeed, I had a neighbour murdered. He worked in a business in Edirne, and he actually had a schoolgirl in the car with him the morning he was murdered. He was bringing her in to catch a school bus, and she was advised that her door was...
Was that into your school?
Catch a school bus into, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what happened? I mean, when you heard the news that, you know, this child who was coming into school was in the car of her father was shot in, attending your school that morning. I mean, surely that must have played in your mind.
Sorry, she wasn't coming into my school. Sorry,
yeah.
She wasn't coming into my school. Apologies, but the gentleman that was murdered, he was a man I lived beside, a man I went to church with, a man I knew very well.
Yeah.
Knew his family extremely well, and it really, really set the community back and put an air of disbelief, an air of perhaps distrust
mm-hmm.
into, just brought that to the community, a community that didn't have that.
Why, again, here's another, you know, murder, and so this person was targeted because he was in the RUC. He was
UDR.
Yeah, sorry, he was in the UDR.
Uh-huh.
What would that say to you? Why him there?
He lived with his widowed mother, and was it a... I asked a question, was it some sort of ethnic cleansing to move the family out of the area? I really can't answer, but it seems strange.
Because there were a lot of Catholic in...
No, in North Fermanagh.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't a Catholic area.
Yeah.
It would have been mostly Protestant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But so, I don't know why it was targeted.
I mean, it was a constant threat.
It was a constant threat. It was something you lived with, something you thought about, but you hoped it would never happen on your doorstep.
Yeah. And Do you know, I suppose you went through all those years teaching there.
I talked with children, obviously, whose parents, whose fathers especially served in UDR at night time and came in the middle of the night. And I'm sure some of those children came from homes where there was great, great worry that their dads may not return after a night's duty or even killed on their farm during the day. Indeed, we had several cases where there were attempts to murder people during the day, murder some of these gentlemen during the day on their farms. One or two was successful, sadly, others not.
And did people kind of come together? I know in a way the part-time UDR members were together, you know, they were supporting each other.
Yes, yes. These people and their families were very, very much supported by the Protestant community, and the community came together to support them. Very, very much so. That would always have been, that was the case. Yeah. They supported them. You would have helped them out in the farm, especially if it had been a lady that was left without maybe a son to succeed her or something like that. It was, yeah.
And the way that those years rolled on were you yearning for some kind of peace then? Or, I mean, was that something, or, you know, did you want this to stop?
Obviously, we all wanted peace. We all wanted it to stop. Mm. But we did not want it to stop. We still wanted to remain within Northern Ireland, live within Northern Ireland, live at peace with our neighbours. And we still had our own... we still wanted to retain our own identity. And I think many people at times felt that identity was being gradually eroded by what they seen were concessions after concessions at that stage to what they would have called the IRA or Sinn Féin.
That's an interesting point. And do you still feel that?
Those times have passed. There is an agreement now being set, an agreement, Belfast Agreement, and then the St Andrews Agreement. There had been, as you know, referendums taken on those, and the stance was to get on with them and work together, and that's what has been happening in government. People have been working together. At the same time, standing up to support their own communities and also trying to retain their own identity. But over the years, the people seem to have been shifting from the middle ground now back to the more extreme ground. Basically, we now have in Northern Ireland government the bigger parties being Sinn Féin and the DUP, and there seems to be less and less middle ground. So we seem to be becoming maybe more extreme in our views, or some people becoming more extreme in their views again.
Which side? When you say extreme?
More extreme. Well, when you look at the results of our elections over the past six, 7 years.
So, there's an obvious worry that your identity is being eroded, as you say. Is that worrying to you?
Of course it's worrying. I was born British. I hope to remain British. And of course it's worrying to me. And we have this big problem with the Irish language at the moment. This so-called trying to force an Irish language act upon what would be considered the unionist. And I use unionist with a small u. in this population of Northern Ireland, at the moment, quite a lot of money is already being spent on promoting Irish within our district council areas, within our local district council areas, and within the BBC itself. They have programmes in Irish, etc. And I have no issue with Irish being offered in schools the same way as French, German, Spanish, as an option for young people to take. And I think that's okay. I don't have an issue with that whatsoever. But to have an Irish Act enforced upon one, which one does not know what it will entail or the contents of it, I think it cannot be accepted at this moment in time.
But to go back to the way that things were, you know, there was this battle continuously going on. You could call it violence, or you could call it troubles. And, but in that time, you had the Unionist Protestants fighting the Republican or the Nationalist Irish.
Yeah.
And so you were... So did you find then, though, that, you know, when it came to an end, that these... that you still... You didn't want these people, these Nationalist Irish, to take over the identity of the Northern Ireland Unionist Protestant. I suppose that's...
Yeah, that might be a fair question. Obviously... We had various identities. Many of the people that were fighting, their aim and identity was towards a united Ireland. Mine was not. Mine was British. And of course that was a problem. But again, we get back to this word, respect. What is respect for one another?
Mm-hmm.
I think we must have that. We must have that. I think that's that. We started to get somewhere with respect and appreciating and tolerating one another when we had the Good Friday Agreement. You had middle of the road people there with the SDLP and Ulster Unionist Party in joint. Setting up a joint government. And yes, Ulster Unionists did have a lot of... There was a lot of opposition to it, but they worked through it, and I think things were working quite well then.
So recording the legacy of the Troubles and discovering what it was how people were affected individually... to have this done in an open way, do you think this is terribly important that people should see exactly what was going on and what happened?
Yes, I do. I think there needs to be transparency over the Troubles. There needs to be transparency over what went on, because we hear of backroom deals that were done. Again, I know I'm going into politics, but backroom deeds that were done, you know, we have these comfort letters that were offered. We had also, behind the scenes, Margaret Thatcher talking to Gerry Adams, I think it was. And I think we need to get to the bottom of everything that has happened, especially some of the deals that were done that we weren't aware of, and it's only now that many things are coming to light.
So you finished your teaching then. Did you stay there, did you?
Oh, yes. I taught for 30 years.
Imagine, 30 years.
30 years, and part of my life, I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah. And when you finished teaching, you're retired now, are you?
I retired,
You're retired from teaching?
Retired from teaching.
And what are you doing now?
I'm in politics.
So you must tell me who you're with.
Oh yes, I went into local government politics. I was a Ulster Unionist Party councillor representing Keish, Edirne, Lack, or North for 7 years, six, 7 years. And then recently I was elected as an MLA for Fermanagh and South Tyrone. Ulster Unionist Party MLA, Fermanagh and South Tyrone.
So can I ask the question, why? Why did you enter politics?
Oh, politics is something I have always had an interest in. As a teenager, I have an interest in. And I do believe it was growing up in the border area. It was something my family were always aware of, politics, listening to the news, listening to debates, something we would have maybe discussed around the kitchen table at times. And it's always something. I also have a great interest in history. I always enjoyed history and everything to do with history and visiting old castles, old churches, things like that. So it's something I've had.
It's in you.
It's in me. Something I've always had.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
And flavour for, yeah.
Well, Rosemary Barton, thank you very much for your time. And thank you for talking to me.
Thank you. Thank you.